It's time for Kennedy for Alabama, a political talk show where we discuss the real issues impacting our sweet home, Alabama. Your voicemails, comments, and texts are welcome at 251-272-9461.
I love this country as much, if not more, than you do. And don't you ever forget that.
And now your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
Good evening to the listening audiences in Mobile, Montgomery, Huntsville, and beyond. My name is Robert Kennedy Jr., and this is Kennedy for Alabama. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode. We're really excited about today's program, so let's get to it. Tonight, we have four fantastic members of this evening's conversation team. The first is Ms. Aquilyn Kennedy.
Hi there.
President of Kennedy Strategic Communications. The second joining us in studio is Mr. Alex Rimmery, who's the Libertarian nominee for U.S. Representative to the United States Congress. The third joining us by phone in the bottom half of the hour is Mr. Tom Holmes, who is president of the Board of Directors for the ARC of Mobile County. And last, just returning from a 10-day cruise, is Mr. Charlie Moss, who is working the production board trying to get off of island time in order to keep Kennedy for Alabama sounding good on the airwaves. So one of the visions that we had when we first started Kennedy for Alabama was creating a platform where some of the candidates who may not necessarily get mainstream media exposure would have the opportunity to engage in conversations to share their perspective with you, the listening audience, directly. So with that, I am very honored to welcome Mr. Alex Rimmery. Alex, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, Robert. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, you know, before we get into any of the political stuff, let's just take a step back. So I believe you've been on FM Talk 106.5 at least one time previously.
Yes, sir. It was on with Sean Sullivan on Midday Mobile.
Yes. So for and that is actually when I heard you for the first time. And I knew after I heard you, I wanted to welcome you to Kennedy for Alabama as well. So before we get into the political, let's just take a step back and tell the listening audience where you're from, where you grew up, kind of where you went to school, and what it is that you did professionally in your career.
Well, I grew up in a tiny little small farming community up in Northwest Illinois.
Okay.
Left there when I was 19, joined the military, joined the United States Army as a Black Hawk helicopter mechanic.
Okay.
Bounced around, spent most of my time at Fort Bragg, North Carolina.
Sure.
Bounced around for a little while, got done doing that, and then met my wife. We got married, met my wife in Louisiana, got married.
Mm-hmm.
We got kids, moved down here. It was, I believe, in 2011, and we've been here ever since.
Sure. So, first of all, as a veteran of the United States Army, I would like to thank you for your service. And then as a graduate of the United States Naval Academy, I'd like to hit you with a highly motivated beat Army, sir, right? So, but no, thank you. Thank you so much for serving. You know, it's interesting in some of the conversations that I've had here relatively recently with my contemporaries, there's just something about those of us who have had the opportunity to serve either in uniform or in any one of a number of Department of Defense civilian positions or even, you know, traditional public service from police, fire, public works, et cetera, but just having the opportunity to do that early in our adult development and how much that kind of informs things that we do from that point forward. So thank you so much for taking that opportunity to serve. So now this is a process that Aquilyn and I went through when we were first on the ballot here in 2017. So as you were kind of looking at the political landscape, what was it that you saw that made you, in consultation with your family, decide to put your name on the ballot?
What I saw is lack of choice. It's a lot of times on the ballot, especially down in this area, one party, one person runs, and it's just a matter of put their name on the ballot, automatic win.
Sure.
And it's just, that's something to me, the political process and choice is extremely important. And I wanted to give people a choice. And this is my first time ever running as a candidate.
Okay.
I've been listening, reading, watching politics all my life. I was that kid that would watch C-SPAN and listen to WGN on the radio instead of watching cartoons or anything else. So politics is something I've followed my entire life. It's something I started following heavily when I joined the military because politicians, they choose where you go. And they choose your future of what you're going to do. And it's something I started following extremely heavily. Then when I took a job overseas, I was working for the State Department and the Department of Defense over there, working on some programs, working with the embassy in Iraq. And then I started following politics extremely heavily in 2012 during Ron Paul's presidential campaign. And that's what really brought me to the libertarian side of things.
Okay, so let me pause you just for a second. Thank you for that background. You know, one of the things that you mentioned that was similar to our experience as well was seeing a lack of choice on the ballot. So literally in 2016, when I was looking at the ballot and saw there was only one candidate running for the position, that's where in my mind I was like, you know what, I feel compelled to at least put my name on the ballot in order to give somebody another choice. Definitely kudos to you for continuing in that particular transition. So typically, we know from a number standpoint that historically the state of Alabama is considered a supermajority state, with the GOP being in the majority. And when you look at the numbers for the last few years, it has presented as a 60% GOP, 40% Democratic Party split. So coming to the table as the Libertarian nominee for a listening audience in these three markets that we're in that has a tendency to be a little bit more conservative, what is it about the Libertarian Party that they need to know that is different from what they would see from a traditional Republican or a traditional Democrat?
I believe the Libertarian Party encompasses its, from a conservative standpoint, very fiscally conservative.
Okay.
Very fiscally conservative on our policies and our beliefs and everything else.
Sure.
But also extremely socially liberal. So it's kind of what I'm seeing here, especially in District 1, Baldwin County, Mobile County, Escambia County. Mm-hmm. It's no longer what it used to be. You have such an influx of people coming from Illinois, New York, California, all these other states that they're leaving their states for a reason, but they're kind of politically homeless. And it's, I believe this area especially is ripe for a Libertarian Party candidate because we do represent a lot of their beliefs when it comes to fiscal responsibility, but we also represent a lot of their beliefs when it comes to social policies and social programs.
You know, it's interesting. I'm fortunate and blessed enough to have established a relationship with our current representative as well as the two representatives that were prior to him. And, you know, it's one thing, there are these areas that we can clearly identify that we have huge differences in philosophy. And that's what caused them to run as Republicans. It's what caused me to run as a Democrat. But I was amazed to see the number of things that we actually had in common, like fiscal responsibility, you know, like our collective support of issues of national defense. Doesn't necessarily mean that we're aligned with every single national defense policy coming out of whoever the current administration is, but at our core, we end up supporting service members as well. So given the fact that there are a lot of these things that we end up agreeing with, what is the basis of your candidacy? So if you're fortunate and blessed enough to be elected, just tell us what would be your priorities if you're fortunate enough to be taking the oath here at the beginning of the year.
And since I'm running for a federal position, my state policies, I do have opinions on state ideas and state everything. And everything else, but I would mainly focus on federal policies.
Okay.
One being, I'd say one of my top ones that's really popular right now is immigration. I would say immigration reform is extremely, extremely important to this nation and to this area around here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of people are, I always hear the talking points, the build the wall or open the borders completely.
Mm-hmm.
It's more nuanced than that.
I've actually never heard open the borders completely.
I heard that today. Listening to a radio show, and some candidates for in other areas were talking about, well, we just need to dissolve the borders and open them up completely, which is, it's That's insane. Not a good idea.
That's insane.
But, but how I believe it's people should be given the opportunity to come to the United States to chase that American dream. Being a great grandson of technically an illegal immigrant, my great grandfather stowed away on a ship after World War One.
Right.
Stowed away, got to Ellis Island, got up to the check-in, and they said, "What's your last name?" He made up my last name on the spot, and they said, "Hey, good." Wrote his name in the book and said, "America's that way. Good luck."
You know, there was an interesting piece of pop culture here, I believe. You and I were talking off air about the history of your name, and you were talking about how when your grandfather made up the name and you were getting an email address during the time that you were in the military. Tell that story about what you figured out.
Oh, yeah. When the U.S. military – because it was across the board, Navy, Army, Marines, everyone had to get up their own email address. And I just typed in my last name because it should just auto-populate, just make sure that your name's not taken. I was the only Rimmery in the entire United States military at that time.
Amazing.
Now, I do have a pretty vast history of family service because, like I said, my great-grandfather, technically an illegal immigrant. All his sons all served World War II, Pacific European Theater. My dad served in Vietnam. I served in Iraq, Afghanistan, and multiple other locations during my time. So that's why I believe we need to develop a policy. And the one policy I heard that fits the best with my idea is have almost an Ellis Island at every major entry point into the United States. People come in. People have a background check. We need to work with other countries to make sure, get names and social security numbers and their information to work with other countries, make sure we don't not let criminals or anyone with a previous violent history, let them in. Because I'm seeing, I know I heard on one of your radio shows, you were talking about Big White's chicken over in Pritchard. And I actually read an article recently where he was being interviewed and talking, he wanted to expand in locations in Mobile and everything else. But couldn't because he couldn't find people to work.
Right.
And I know he probably really wants to hire people within the community. But as a business owner, I know he also really wants to expand. And I believe bringing immigrants in, give them the ability to get legal work with a card and ID and everything else to be able to fill those jobs to all these businesses that are down right now, businesses that are closing across the nation because of lack of workers. They would fill those positions. These businesses would thrive, would expand, would hire more people. And it's I just feel it's a good policy.
So here's the thing that's interesting about this. And you're reminding me a lot of the experience that I had in 2017 and 2018. When you talk about the issue like a normal person, right, it almost creates cognitive dissonance with what is happening in the political space. Because as you mentioned, there's a conventional school of thought that says, okay, build a wall is option A. And then there's a corresponding narrative that says, you know, open borders is option B. And it's almost as if you're not willing to go into one of those two camps, then you're not anybody who gets the airtime in the political space. We know when we were debating this issue with the incumbent in 2018, when we talked about the issue of border security, that of course it's going to be a portfolio of options. There are going to be drones. There are going to be electronic checkpoints. There are going to be cameras. There are places along the 2,000 miles of border where a physical structure like a wall makes sense. But it's ultimately a portfolio of options that allow you to secure the border. But the larger issue is, and this is one of the things that Aquilin had referred to previously, if you were to look at the example of a house, if somebody comes to your door and knocks on the door, there should be some way to process them in an orderly fashion. But if somebody comes through your window, your reaction is completely different. So it's just interesting when you have the conversation as a normal, everyday person, the same way we would if we were sitting down having a cup of lemonade, that you may end up with some sort of options that are different.
No, exactly. And speaking of coming through your window, you know, that's a criminal activity.
Right.
Just wanted to talk about your criminal justice reform ideas. You kind of mentioned it was one of the critical areas in your platform. Can you tell us a little more about that?
The one thing I believe, and I've believed for a long time, when I was a kid, and I consider 18 a kid.
Okay.
Did I do some dumb kid stuff when I was 18? Absolutely.
Sure.
If I would have been arrested, and it was, I'll admit it, it was for minor drug use.
Sure.
And it was, I was 18. It was, I was just, that was me. And I didn't hurt anybody. It was, I wasn't doing anything bad and everything. But if I was arrested at that time, my career would have been done. Mm-hmm. I would have never been able to join the military.
Sure.
I wouldn't have the family I have now, my wife, my kids, my family, and everything else. I think we are a nation too much focused on the stick, not the carrot.
Right.
We're too much, and our jails are just full of nonviolent offenders that I even heard an interview, and this was a while back, and I actually was talking to Sean about this. I heard an interview, and it was with former President Obama, and he was talking about during his college years that he did a little coke, smoked a little marijuana and everything. If that man would have been arrested for what he was talking about, mm-hmm. he would have never been president of the United States. He would have never done anything. And it's just, I think, and I am very, very pro-law. I want people in every community to be safe and secure in their homes. I want people to feel comfortable walking the streets and let their kids go outside and play. And it's the policies that we have now, the jails are full, millions of taxpayer dollars are being spent on something that could be probably handled with a ticket.
Yeah, and this brings up the larger issue of public policy in general. When you talk about there's a goal and then there are programs that are in place that ostensibly are attempting to help us as a country accomplish the goal, but there's still this measurement process in which we can determine through key performance indicators whether we're getting closer to the goal or further away from the goal. And when you look at something like the war on drugs, essentially the only thing that it accomplished was putting more people in jail.
Right.
Than had been happening previously. And so whenever you think about somebody going in there, there's not only the moral implications of removing a person from society for a certain period of time under the umbrella of holding them accountable, but there's actually the long-term economic impact of having them removed from the workforce and then the stigma associated with them becoming a returning citizen, right? And if all of that can be avoided because you're handling it as a misdemeanor versus a felony in which you're required to incarcerate somebody, there's an impact to society as a whole that could potentially be better tomorrow than it is today. So thank you for focusing on that area. So we've talked about two things. We talked about immigration as a priority. We've talked about criminal justice reform as a priority. What other priorities would you have if you were elected?
And coming from the background I came from with the military.
Okay.
I absolutely am very proud of the service I did. I'm very mm-hmm. proud of what I did.
Sure.
And like I said, I was in Iraq in 2003.
Okay.
We went to Easter Day 2003 is when I got to Balad, Iraq.
Okay.
That was before there was any fence. That was when it was just the wild, wild west. It mm-hmm. was just utter chaos at that
sure.
time. Controlled chaos is a better way to say it. But it's one of those things. I'm very anti-interventionist. I'm very
interesting. Okay.
I don't want American military to be used as a tool for the government to enforce anything overseas. It's a lot of these countries. My time in Iraq and losing some of my friends in Iraq and Afghanistan, it was hard for me to sit there and think of what did we do?
Mm-hmm.
What did we accomplish? And was my friend's life worth it?
Sure.
And I sat and I had a real serious conversation with my mom. This was a few months back. And she was talking about maybe we should send troops in the Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
And I stopped her. I said, Mom, here's the deal. If I was still in the military, would my life be worth dying in Ukraine right now?
Yes.
And she's like, of course
yes.
not. Your life, I wouldn't want you to die in Ukraine. I was like, then don't ask other people to send their kids to die in Ukraine.
Right.
I was like, that's a very, very important thing. If your family's life isn't worth giving up in a conflict, don't ask other people. And it's usually poor people. It's usually not people from well-to-do parts of society.
Sure.
It's usually poor kids that get sent to these areas that fight and die. And then when all said and done, then you always hear the government officials just kind of shrug their shoulders and say, well, we tried. And it's...
You know, it's interesting. The two thoughts popped into my head as you were going through that. The first one was a few weeks ago, I attended my class reunion from the Naval Academy. I graduated from there as undergrad. And as a component of the reunion, we had a memorial service. And there were 1,010 of us that graduated that year. Since the time we started, we've actually lost 19 classmates. Now, none of our classmates actually died engaged in combat. We had a number who died because of, you know, accidents in training, which we always know happens when we're getting ready for combat. And some had some mental health challenges. You know, we talk about the impact on the mental health of our veterans normally under the umbrella of PTSD, right? So we have had folks who passed that way as well. But I love the way that you tied it to the concept of whether or not your life or the life of your family member or the life of your loved one is worth the decision to go into some sort of armed conflict. So thank you for sharing that. So three priorities. Let me ask you this question just because it popped into my mind. There's been a lot of talk recently of the long-term health effects of burn pits. Are you familiar with that issue, or did you have any friends or fellow soldiers who were impacted by that?
Oh, I was actually directly impacted by that.
Okay.
We had the big pit because at the time there was no garbage service.
Sure.
There was no sanitary service. So everything had to be burned.
Mm.
And I remember we dug just a big hole and all garbage, everything was just a couple minutes, like a couple feet away from our tent.
Mm-hmm.
And we would be breathing that in all day, every day. And we were exposed to depleted uranium and a bunch of other things
mm-hmm.
over there.
Oh,
and
wow.
Seeing people come home, seeing people come with the different kinds of cancer, lung diseases, everything else, and in their 30s that are just,
oh my gosh,
just completely racked by things like that. It's mm-hmm. it's heartbreaking.
Yep.
And I want to see those people taken care of, because I've always had my opinion on that thing is it's kind of with the military is you break, you buy.
Yes.
These people sacrificed everything.
And
when they get home, I believe that's the other thing I would really address is the VA healthcare, but that needs to really step up the game.
Yep. So, hey, we got about 2 minutes left in the segment. So before we close out, if folks who are listening to you today want to learn more about your campaign, mm-hmm. get in contact with you, potentially make a political donation to your campaign, what's the best way for them to do that?
The best way to learn about me is probably my Twitter account, Facebook. Like I said, my entire political campaign is me and my wife.
Mm-hmm.
So it's setting up a website and setting up everything's been kind of difficult, but mm-hmm. that's probably the two best things. All you got to do is, my name is very easy to find on those two items. And I would say another good for information source is the Libertarian Party of Alabama's website. They have all of our everything on there that you could possibly want to learn about the Libertarian Party here in the state of Alabama. And also a good thing I want to mention, September 30th from 5 to 7 at the Cedar Street Social Club
okay.
here in Mobile, there's going to be a meet and greet for a bunch of candidates here in Alabama.
Okay. Well, Alex, thank you so much. We really do appreciate that. You taking the time to share with our listening audience. And we're gonna be keeping an eye on you, man. Gonna be keeping an eye on you.
We're absolutely, we really appreciate it so much. And just to let you know, I just did a quick search on, and it was Remery for number 4 Congress, right?
Yes, ma'am.
That's it. Okay. So we appreciate you being here. Thank you.
All right. Well, well, thank you once again to Mr. Alex Remery, the Libertarian nominee for U.S. Representative to U.S. Congress. And as I was mentioning before at the beginning of the segment, this is what we do here on Kennedy for Alabama. We create a platform for candidates to be able to come and share their thoughts with you directly about what their reasons are for running and what their priorities will be if they were elected. So with that, we're actually going to go to a break, and then we will see you on the other side when we will have our next guest joining us. You are listening to Kennedy for Alabama.
This question is for all managers. How often do you feel like Charlie Brown's teacher when speaking to your team? With Coached Up, the snooze fest is over. Founder and CEO, speaker, and corporate trainer, Levy D. King III is the answer to attention competition. For 16 years and counting, Coached Up continues to transform messages into life-changing perspectives for his corporate, civic, and nonprofit audiences. Coached Up provides learning and professional development solutions for departments across entire organizations that align and develop with the best of their culture. Clients echo Coached Up by helping to improve collaboration, engagement, and foster team synergy, creativity, and innovation. To reclaim your team's attention and build your organizational culture, call Coached Up at 251-298-7615 or visit Coached Up on Facebook at Coached Up to Success or online at CoachedUpToSuccess.com. That's Coached Up, the number 2, success.com.
Ever wonder how some brands always seem to be right on target with the sweet spot of their market? Right on time and always top of mind. When choosing Dogwood Productions, these wonders become wonderful connections with your market. Specializing in website solutions, new media strategy, and professional communications, Dogwood Productions has worked with some of the Gulf Coast's most prominent brands across many industries, including corporate, legal, hospitality, health, civic, restaurant, real estate, and the arts. And if you haven't visited Dogwood Recording Studios, make an appointment and turn that wonder into a wonderfully groovy experience. Call Dogwood Productions 251-476-0858. That's 251-476-0858. Or visit online dogwoodproductions.com for more information. Our customers agree. If asked, they could, should, and would do it again at Dogwood.
What do business, municipality, government, and nonprofit leaders have in common? The desire to win, to fulfill the mission for the benefit of their customers and constituents. That's why they call us at Kennedy Strategic Communication. At KSC, we help our clients develop strategies for targeting and converting their target markets. We provide branding, public relations, marketing, advertising, executive coaching, campaign and political support, and other business services. With over 25 years of experience in corporate, nonprofit, startup, and political settings from coast to coast, Kennedy Strategic Communication is here to help you capture your best customers. Learn more at KennedyStrategicCommunication.com or call us at 334-544-0510. That's 334-544-0510.
Welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. Now, let's have a real conversation about what's going on in our Alabama communities. Once again, your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
And welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. For those of you who are just now joining the program, during the first half of the show, we had a very informative conversation with Mr. Alex Remery, who is a Libertarian nominee for U.S. Representative to United States Congress. We want to extend him our thanks once again for coming and spending a few minutes with us here on Kennedy for Alabama. So with that, we're actually going to go to the phone lines and see if we have our second guest here. Mr. Holmes, are you on the line?
I'm here, Robert. Thank you.
All right. Well, hey, it is so very good to hear your voice today. How are you doing?
Doing well, thank you.
All right. Well, we really appreciate you taking a few minutes to return to Kennedy for Alabama. We know that you have been on the show before, and we're so very happy to welcome you back. I was really thankful that you had reached out to me, because one of the topics that we've addressed here on Kennedy for Alabama has been the issue of individuals who are differently abled as a broad category. And you reached out to me, and we started a conversation that was focused specifically on adults with intellectual disabilities. And so I think it's very important for us from time to time to step away from the purely political game that we play sometimes here on talk radio and focus on something that's much more substantive. So thank you for giving us the opportunity to do that here for a few minutes.
Well, thank you for having me on.
All right. So the first thing is, can you just very briefly tell a listening audience about your background and then tell us about your current role as the president of the board of directors for ARC of Mobile County?
Well, first, I'm the parent of a 45-year-old young man with intellectual and developmental disabilities.
Okay.
In 2001, I retired from the state of Alabama and became the executive director for the ARC of Alabama, which is the statewide advocacy organization for people with intellectual disabilities. And since moving to Mobile in 2014, I served on the board of the former Mobile Association for Retarded Citizens until their merger with AlphaPoint.
Okay.
And then in November 2019, I helped organize a new local chapter of the ARC for Mobile County, which was begun with about 20 parents and friends, and we are actively expanding today.
Okay. So take a moment and explain what the mission of the ARC of Mobile County locally and, you know, the ARC of the state of Alabama or the ARC for the United States of America. Could just tell us a little bit about the mission. What is it that those organizations are doing?
Our mission is to protect and promote the human and civil rights of all people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, and to actively support their full inclusion and participation in the community throughout their lifetimes.
Okay. Well, thank you for explaining what the mission is. So one of the things that you and I were talking about when we were getting ready for this segment a little bit earlier in the day was that there was a material change that happened here in the 2019-2020 timeframe that ended up having a significant impact on adults who have intellectual disabilities. Can you tell the audience a little bit about what that change was?
Well, in July of 2019, the Mobile Association for Retarded Citizens merged its operation with AlphaPoint Health Systems.
Okay.
And so, you know, we're no longer in existence as of that date. The services formerly provided by the Mobile Association were assumed by AlphaPoint Health Systems, and they continued those services until March of 2020. When the pandemic occurred, and many of those services, particularly the day services, educational services, were shut down and have not resumed since that time.
Okay. You know, one of the things that you have mentioned, and this is just for framing for the audience, is that due primarily to some federal legislation, there's a lot of focus and support for children with intellectual disabilities. And it kind of extends age-wise, so it goes beyond age 18 all the way to the age of 21. But from the point that an individual reaches kind of the 21st year and beyond, that support is not as significant as it is when someone is in their educational years. One of the other things that you mentioned was that prior to the change, there were some residential services that were provided, and then obviously the non-residential day services that were provided. So can you just explain a little bit about the difference between the two, and then specifically what ended in, you know, with the pandemic starting?
Well, when health systems assumed all of the services from the Mobile Association, that included the daily educational services on Gordon Smith Drive at the Moore Center and the Fred Delchamp Center.
Okay.
And they also assumed responsibility for operating 5 group homes where individuals with intellectual disabilities live 24/7. And basically, we were notified in December of 2021 that Alta Point was going to discontinue the day services altogether.
Oh, wow.
And we're only going to continue the residential services.
Okay. So
these services are paid for, operated under Medicaid waivers through the State Department of Mental Health and federally from the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare to individuals who qualify. They're on Medicaid, and that's the general qualification. So anyway, there were over 100-plus people whose services in the day programs that were discontinued in March of 2020, and most of those individuals had to go home to live with a family member, a parent, a sibling, until the services were to resume, and most of those services have not.
Well, I was just thinking about that. So the March of 2020 situation, just as a person who's listening to this story, I can understand that, right? That was COVID. But now that we're in a posture where we're not shut down anymore and we're learning to live in a world where COVID still exists, the fact that those services were not reinitiated to me is quite shocking. Because I'm sitting here thinking, what is a working age parent supposed to do if they cannot get this support for their child with an intellectual disability? It's like, what do they even do? Do they remove themselves from the workforce now in order to be that provider of care? Or what are the other options available? Or are there any other options available to support them?
Well, that's the main option, and we have had a number of parents. I know the story of one who's on our board who cares for her son who has multiple disabilities. Her husband had to quit his retired job. He had a job who was part-time, I think, and he had to quit that job in order to stay home and help take care of the son. So, and of course, I'm retired. I've been retired from the arts since 2014. So my son has been home with me the last 2.5 years, 24/7, with no services at all, very little communication from the providers here in Mobile County. He has just recently started a new service and participated for about a week. And
okay.
Then this week he's not been feeling well. He has some health issues. So there are over 100 families that have not been receiving any services. So they have been faced with the responsibility of finding some way to take care of their loved one at home for the last 2.5 years, just waiting on these services to resume.
Gotcha. So let me ask the question this way. So we have listeners who are in the Mobile market, Montgomery market, and Huntsville market. So if they're hearing this story for the first time and they're having a reaction similar to the one that I had, which is, hey, we as a society need to be doing something in order to support the families who are supporting the children with intellectual disabilities, what is it that you would like them to do? And we have about 2 minutes before we go into the break.
Well, certainly I would encourage people to reach out to their local chapter of the ARC, find out what services that are being provided and not provided as a result of funding or whatever the issues may be, and see how they might support those services.
Okay.
I invite people to become members of their local chapter. Anyone who subscribes to the purpose of the ARCs can become a member of their local group for ranges in various $10 to $25 a year for a person or a family.
Okay.
And so that would be the main thing I would suggest to them.
Sure.
I would also add, if they have the opportunity, certainly to reach out to their local elected leaders. Many of our program services are funded by city funds, county funds, and state funds.
Gotcha. And you had mentioned to me before that the ARC of Mobile County has a good relationship with folks here in the Mobile delegation. Is that correct?
Yes, we had a meeting with three of our legislators last week, and have been very pleased with their response. And they have been willing to give us some support once we decide just what it is we can do as an organization and how we want to go about it. So we're in the process of developing that plan of work, if you will, at this time.
Sure. And that's one of the things that I found with some of the things that we have done through our Kennedy Strategic Communications business, which is the business that Aquilin runs, is that in client advocacy work, we found that at least at the local level, the Mobile County delegation has been very willing to listen to any one of a number of the various advocacies that we have had. So, hey, we're going to go to a break. Do you have a few minutes to hang around with us there, Tom?
Sure. Be glad to. Be right here.
All right. Well, we will continue the conversation when we come back from the break. You're listening to Kennedy for Alabama.
Ever wonder how some brands always seem to be right on target with the sweet spot of their market? Right on time and always top of mind. When choosing Dogwood Productions, these wonders become wonderful connections with your market. Specializing in website solutions, new media strategy, and professional communications, Dogwood Productions has worked with some of the Gulf Coast's most prominent brands across many industries, including corporate, legal, hospitality, health, civic, restaurant, real estate, and the arts. And if you haven't visited Dogwood Recording Studios, make an appointment and turn that wonder into a wonderfully groovy experience. Call Dogwood Productions 251-476-0858. That's 251-476-0858. Or visit online dogwoodproductions.com for more information. Our customers agree. If asked, they could, should, and would do it again at Dogwood.
This question is for all managers. How often do you feel like Charlie Brown's teacher when speaking to your team? With Coached Up, the snooze fest is over. Founder and CEO, speaker, and corporate trainer, Levy D. King III is the answer to attention competition. For 16 years and counting, Coached Up continues to transform messages into life-changing perspectives for his corporate, civic, and nonprofit audiences. Coached Up provides learning and professional development solutions for departments across entire organizations that align and develop with the best of their culture. Clients echo Coached Up by helping to improve improve collaboration, engagement, and foster team synergy, creativity, and innovation. To reclaim your team's attention and build your organizational culture, call Coached Up at 251-298-7615 or visit Coached Up on Facebook at Coached Up to Success or online at CoachedUpToSuccess.com. That's Coached Up, the number 2, success.com.
Welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. Now, let's have a real conversation about what's going on in our Alabama communities. Once again, your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
And welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. For those of you who are joining us here for the last segment of our show, we have been having a conversation with Mr. Tom Holmes, who's the president of the board of directors for the ARC of Mobile County. And we've been focusing our conversation around adults with intellectual disabilities. And so before, Tom, you still there? Hey, Tom, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you.
All right. So before we go back into what it is that we want the listeners to do, there was something that you and Aquilin were talking about during the last break that I thought was important for us to bring to the listening audience. And you were mentioning that there is a distinction between a physical disability and intellectual disability and issues related to mental health. Can you just talk to that a little bit just so the listening audience understands?
Well, you know, mental illness is a separate diagnosis, if you will, that's treated with medication and other things. And the State Department of Mental Health has responsibility for that, as well as substance abuse and intellectual developmental disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
The difference being that most people with intellectual developmental disabilities are born with a condition that makes them differently abled, as you mentioned earlier. It doesn't mean that they're disabled or
right.
handicapped or crippled, as some people are prone to use those terms. They are people first that happen to have a intellectual or developmental disability. And so we, along with other stakeholders, try to advocate annually and regularly for state and local funding to provide their services.
Yeah, and that.
And so I would encourage.
I was going to say that was the nugget that I wanted to make sure that we got to, because in issues of public policy, I like to follow the money, right? And so you just touched on that. From an advocacy standpoint, I'm sure that your organizations want to be able to follow the flow of money from either the federal government, the state government, or any particular local resources. So what's your advocacy been historically in those spaces?
Well, of course, through the ARC of the United States, we have a public policy group that advocates for us with the Congress and the executive branch of government. And then we have the ARC of Alabama, which is our state umbrella, which advocates on behalf of our 30-plus chapters in Alabama for adequate funding. And unfortunately, I don't think I mentioned, Aquilin, that of all this new funding coming down from the federal government, I've seen no pronouncement of any new money mm-hmm. being used to increase the wages of people that serve our population.
Right.
They opened some crisis centers for people with mental illness around the state, which is definitely needed. But on the other side of it, I've seen no new money dedicated to services for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. That's very disappointing on the part of the governor and the legislature that they haven't reached out to do that.
Mm-hmm. And so there are two follow-on questions that I have. We've got about 4 minutes left in the segment. The first question has to do with this issue of staffing. And so we know that there were a lot of individuals who had deep experience and institutional knowledge when it came to supporting the individuals with the intellectual development disabilities that may have been impacted from a job perspective during the COVID pandemic. Do you know whether or not those folks have come back into the profession or whether or not they've moved on to other things?
Well, the majority have not. Those people who were laid off in March of 2020, and that's essentially what happened from the services here in Mobile and other providers around the state, most of them have not returned to the jobs that they had serving our population. That has to do with a factor of what the rates that are allowed by the State Department of Mental Health are paid out to local providers. I mean, there's only a certain amount they can do. And I would just comment, the Alabama Department of Mental Health does a good job with the resources that are given them by the legislature and the governor.
Okay.
It's just that the resources are not sufficient.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we, you know, as a local organization, try to advocate for an increase in those.
Gotcha. Well, thank you for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's really, really powerful, educating us and helping us understand the difference between these pots of money. And the fact that there is more need that's not been addressed is critical. So how can people help who are listening? What else can we do in the community to help the mission?
Well, to say, certainly I would invite anyone who committed to help our population to check with the local chapter of the ARC, become a member for $20 or less, make a donation. All of our chapters are 501c3 nonprofit. They're eligible to receive donations. I think, Robert, the thing I sent you has our email address and our phone number there. And likewise with the ARC of Alabama, you can check their website if you're interested whether or not there's one locally. We do not have one in every county, I would tell you that. There are only 30.
Oh, wow.
We cover about 45 counties in Alabama. And where we do have an active chapter of families and friends of people with intellectual disability, more money from the state flows there. So I would certainly encourage people, if you're interested, we've got a couple of groups, I understand, that are working to get organized in counties where we do not have chapters. So.
All right. Well, hey, thank you so much for sharing that information with our listening audience. We know that the way that we end up influencing what's happening in public policy is first and foremost making people aware of a need. And you have done that for us today in spades. So thank you so much for doing that. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Robert, for having us all.
All right. And we know that your niece, my high school classmate, Ashley, continues to make her trips up to Philadelphia to receive the treatment that she needs for the ocular melanoma that she's been dealing with. We also know that your sister-in-law right now is experiencing some health issues. We will definitely be keeping both of them in our prayers.
Thank you very much, Robert.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.
All right.
All right. And with that, we have come to the end of this episode of Kennedy for Alabama. Thank you to our listening audiences in Mobile, Montgomery, Huntsville, and beyond for taking a few minutes and tuning into our program. So with that, we're going to leave you for now, and we will see you soon. Until then, my name is Robert Kennedy Jr., and this is Kennedy for Alabama.